Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. I'm Hi-Hot, Mr. Broussard, if you're feeling optimistic.
Okay, and I am Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black. What are you optimistic about?
You know, this is going to be a great week, and I'm optimistic about this. There's a special holiday on Wednesday. I'm not sure if everybody knows.
Oh my God. Yeah, you're right. This is a very like elite holiday that everyone may not be informed about.
Yeah. And so I'm turning another year older.
Woo! It's a birthday.
Yeah. But I'm optimistic because Lindsay and I were talking about this and she was getting on me because she was like, you can't look at this. The fact that we're dealing with all this COVID-19 mess that, and so you can't bring that into your new birth year. Like you have to still celebrate and make it a joyous occasion. And so I took that spirit and I've been planning, shout out Ebony, shout out Lindsay as well. But so trying to figure out what exactly I'm going to do. I've got a couple ideas, but the next episode we'll be filming. I'll have an update for y'all.
I'm happy too because you're really thinking that you weren't going to do anything for your birthday. Oh, I'm just going to, he said he's going to wait till his half birthday and then I'll be whatever and a half. And I'm like, yo, these Pisces, Aries, Taurus, and soon to be Gemini. I'm like, y'all are really just making up stuff. It's more so I would like for everybody to focus on, you know, coming up with creative ideas to celebrate your birthday. And one of our partners, Kicking It With Key, has an episode on her YouTube channel where she talks about ideas that you can do for your birthday in quarantine, because y'all will not be the last astrological sign
to go through this, right? And even once everything starts opening back up, it'll be like a phased process.
It'll be different.
So you don't have to be, it's good. It's going to be like MySpace days. Like your top eight is only going to be able to go to your party.
Yo, that's okay. Cause the numbers are dwindling and that's all right. And that's all right with me. We're going to be eight deep in February with our mask on at the table.
Hey. I can't. You said the numbers are dwindling.
Those are dwindling.
What's your update?
Mine is, oh my gosh. So y'all, I have this, my mom is such a saint.
She actually
got me a gift and it came the day before Mother's Day. So then it was like so much like joy that I didn't even expect to have before Mother's Day weekend. But she bought me some roller skates.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'll be like, bounce. skate. Hey. Yeah, I do be listening to 70s music. I've only skated with them officially 2.5 times. Because the first time was a halftime and I was in the house.
Oh, so you like the celebrities. You know, celebrities, they
yes.
be skating and stuff. So in the house.
When Erykah Badu and Jill Scott had their verses, yes, I was in there on my skates and I was, you know, swaying my little hips. They're not little though. Ow. But the next time I like did a mile run, I was at Anacostia Park and I was like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, skate because I want to get good. But I realized I have to practice.
Yeah.
But my friend Jordan, he skates. And the week before we were talking mess, I was talking mess. I was like, I can't bend no corner with no four-wheel skates like that. I might have to be inline.
Right.
I'm a rollerblader, really.
Yeah, me too.
So then when I got the gifts, I'm like, okay, this is nice. But now let me practice. And I was like 30 minutes in, I'm on my way to my car and the road kind of switched because I was in the street and it was a little more slippery. And I was like, okay, less effort. But I don't know if I got distracted, but one thing led to another and I think my right foot slipped. I don't really know what happened.
Jesus.
And boom, I came crashing down. I fell. Well, I have like you see these scratches.
Yeah, I do see the scars.
Just the scratches. They're not scars yet.
Well, sorry.
I had some scratches, but really I fell on my tailbone, y'all. And I have this like, it's at least the size of a tennis ball. It's like a dark black bruise on my butt, on the left butt cheek. And it's some fat back there. So I'm like, I had to hit very hard
for it to bruise
that way.
In like one spot too. Like what?
In one spot. Yep, exactly. But it's okay because I'm gonna keep roller skating. I get the blade and skate mixed up. But that's my update and it was fun. And still is. If you are listening to this episode on the day that it drops, then I am wishing you a happy Memorial Day. Memorial Day was used to honor the fallen soldiers of the Union after the Civil War originally, and one of the earliest commemorations was organized by recently freed slaves. You know, not surprised that Black people are starting everything or getting the momentum. So happy Memorial Day. I hope that everyone is honoring our fallen soldiers, especially if you know someone personally. And if you're having a Zoom cookout or barbecue, because people from the West Coast say barbecue, people from the East Coast say cookout.
Shout out barbecue.
Okay. Either way, if you're doing some type of Zoom interactions to celebrate Memorial Day, then I really hope that you enjoy it.
Yes. And now on to our segments. Our first segment that we have today is called We Love the Kids. And I just wanted to talk to y'all about Field Day. And the reason why is because we're nearing the end of the school year. And I know that a lot of campuses aren't really doing, or schools in general aren't having Field Day. But it's such a great time. And I just was scrolling through my pictures on my phone the other day. And now that we're on Zoom calls, I brought up a picture of me and my student at Field Day. And I just started dying laughing. I'm showing Liz the picture now.
Oh, God.
But it's literally me racing a student. And I forgot, like, I think it was like some type of like relay race, but it just spoke volumes to like the relationship that she, she's a great student, but we're at the very beginning of the year, we really didn't have that good of a relationship to where she would feel comfortable about A, speaking to me, B, wanting to race me. But I think that by her seeing me in the light of, okay, like, let's compete against one another, she was able to be like, oh, okay, like, you know what, Mr. Jahai, like, let's go. And you could just see her authentic self and see how much she's grown over the course of a year. And that's what I loved. I love the fact that she, at the end of, after I beat her, of course,
there we
she
go.
Was able to really talk to me and be like, oh, come on, Mr. Jahai, let's do it again. And then so it was a great competitive spirit, and it just speaks to, like, the importance and the value of how kids have to see us as humans, and that, and more importantly, like, we have to see them as humans and see them as beings who are going to eventually change, and like why we do what we do is so important, of trying to like help mold their minds and get them to be very introspective and realize like who they are as people. So that's the reason why we love the kids.
And moving on to our next segment called Two Sets of Notes. Now, it's kind of been a couple of episodes since we talked about this segment, but this segment is a section where we will discuss a current event and its impact on us, our students, or education, and then also insert our opinion. So our opinion will kind of be the second set of notes. So I intentionally did not tell Jahad this story because I want to hear the reaction. Mm-hmm. So I have a friend. Her name is Nini. I love her. She has a mom. So I dropped Nini off at her mom's house the other night, and we were in the house, and I'm just talking to mom, right? And then Nini has a younger brother, and her younger brother goes to school. He's, I think she said he's in sixth grade.
Okay.
But the school that he's at has a music class, and mm-hmm. so they've all been assigned instruments. So he was assigned the clarinet. So Nini's mom is telling me that, you know, with the pandemic, like, he forgot his clarinet at school.
No.
That's reasonable, you know, because, like, we also thought when we first were out of school that we were going to go back in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
The lies. So, Nini Mom's telling me, she's like, well, he wasn't that, he was still a beginner, is what she was saying. He wasn't that good at it beforehand, right? I'm mm-hmm. like, okay. So, she sent an email, and I was like, wow, you sent an email to the music teacher to tell the music teacher, like, hey, he can't do this work. He doesn't have his clarinet. And I'm thinking, not wow, you did that, but I'm like, wow, I wish some of my parents would like take the initiative to be like, hey, my kid can't do the work. I'm telling you why.
Right.
But on top of that, she provided an alternative. She was like, yeah, my kid left the clarinet at school. But we have, she said they have like a guitar and they have a keyboard at the house. So she's just like, hey, is there other lessons that you maybe have given somebody else for those instruments that he can do at home with the instruments that we
wow.
have?
Wow.
Isn't that great?
That's amazing. That oh, like.
No, we're not there yet. Oh. You're not about to go on.
Go ahead. Finish.
Do you know what the teacher said? This teacher's suggestion? The teacher's suggestion was for him to play the air clarinet.
The air clarinet? What do you mean?
Like, pretend he had a clarinet and play it.
You might as well go get a recorder at that point. Like, what? An air clarinet? How's
And yeah, that's why I had to cut you off, because you were getting too excited. I was like,
I was like, she made solutions focused. Like, I love that. She pitched an idea. Like, all you got to do is, here are a couple of songs that he can work on. He can learn this instrument instead. I feel like that's an easy, like, solution.
I just feel like I have not had many times where a parent is coming up and being solutions oriented opposed to just giving me a problem and telling me to fix it. So when you have a parent, first of all, you're in specials, boo-boo. You're in a music class. Like, there, unfortunately, there is a hierarchy. And the hierarchy goes ELA, math, science sometimes, and everybody else. And music falls in everybody else. Not saying it's not important. I'm just being realistic that's about how parents perceive these. But we got a parent that's actually saying, like, hey, I have all these options for my kid. And you're saying, use air clarinet? And there might be some research, you know?
Maybe.
Says, like, hey, you can still learn it. But mom already said that he was a beginner.
Right.
So if she's...
He needs the extra support. Like, right. This is not going to be enough. I'm really curious, because I don't know much about music education. I mean, I tried alto saxophone in sixth grade.
Right.
No, actually fifth grade, because I didn't want to try out to be a percussionist, because they only would let a certain amount of students do it.
True.
But because of that, I'm like, here, you got a nice young man who's learning how to play the clarinet, and now he's being shifted to maybe a guitar. And what was the other instrument that she said?
Keyboard.
Those are two. Then those are, I feel like those are easy, like viable. Like, oh, okay, like here's this little
quick
tip.
You can YouTube it.
Yeah, that's exactly. Like, here's this song. Like, you can work on X, Y, and Z, but instead, didn't give a solution at all. Like you said, do an air clarinet.
I'm just like, okay. And it, like, also thinking about the time in which we're in.
Right.
I know that everybody's all over the place. Teacher probably thought that there was some reasoning behind that, but on our set of notes over on this side, in our opinion, I know I'm speaking for you, but that just wasn't a viable solution.
In addition to, because it's like, what then is this student who was just getting, like, he was learning how to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And now you just ripped that away from him. And, like, who knows what that, like, what opportunity that could have given him. Maybe he wants to be a musician one day.
Yes.
And, like, maybe because of this one experience, this could kind of shift him away from the clarinet. And maybe, but shout out to mom. And that's the reason why, as soon as you said mom, was like, I was so excited. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, you don't see that a lot, and you don't see it enough. And so, like, for her to not only, she gave two instruments and was like, there has to be something that you have that you could just pitch and say, hey. And the teacher didn't even say, like, oh, you know what, like, give me, like, a week or two, and I'm going to circle back. It was kind of like, oh, no, just use this. While I think that he could be learning how to use the instruments and learning the different notes and things. And maybe, I don't remember much about
instruments,
saxophone and instruments in general. But I feel like there just has to be something that translates to the clarinet from the keyboard and the guitar. That's what that's
yes. Like. it could have been handled differently. And that concludes our two sets of notes.
Shout out, moms.
Cut the noise. Cut the noise. Cut the noise. If you're not tuning in to Kicking It with Key, then you are surely missing out. Key is a YouTuber, self-care enthusiast, an educator, hey, a queen of unboxings, and a lupus survivor. And Key is also one of my really good friends. Kicking It with Key focuses on sharing personal journeys to light the pathway for others through tips and hacks for everyday struggles. If you're interested in cutting the noise and living your very best life, tune in every other Sunday at 7 p.m. on YouTube. You can find Key on YouTube at Kian Cole. Let me spell it out for you. KianaCole. You can also find Kicking It with Key on Instagram at KickingItWithKey_. I'm going to spell that out for you too. KICKINITWITHKI_. Join Key so you can also live your very best life. Moving on to our next segment entitled Concept Development. In case you're a new listener starting with this episode, Concept Development is the segment in which we get into the topic of the episode. This episode is extra special because it is going to kick off our very first mini-series focused on a very important concept that actually comes up inadvertently in all of our lives every single day. Special education. Hadi actually just mastered at Howard University in what? Yes, special education. So honestly, y'all, throughout the mini-series, I tend to talk a lot, but we're going to hear a lot from Jahad because he's technically the pro at all this now.
Technically. But today we're going to begin with the history of special education. And although the history of SPED stretches very far back, in order to build a strong foundation for us, we're going to start off by coming from the center and getting to the developments in special education, specifically reflecting on the last few decades, beginning with the 70s. We were really going to get down with our perspective of the movement and highlight some parts of history that we think our listeners will be most moved by. There were feverish attempts by a couple of past presidents, including Truman and Nixon, to address SPED prior to the 70s, but it didn't seem to it very intentional, and even the good parts of the acts passed were not actually applied. For example, there were government initiated experiments going on that manipulated parents into handing their handicapped kids over for testing. In one case, parents were coerced to believing that their kids would be in an experiment that would give them privileges and access to healthy food / care. But they failed to mention that the cereal kids were being fed was full of radioactive iron and calcium. Think about that. Throughout this time, there were many associations and entities created to provide support and aid for various disabilities, but schools still weren't inclusive and cities and buildings were still architecturally inaccessible for people with disabilities to maneuver around.
So essentially, in a nutshell, America started off like, these are understatements, but for lack of better words, with these dehumanizing and rather disgusting practices. And then eventually there was a civil rights movement for disabled people that was created, and it directly influenced special education in schools today. But the fight is not over, because people that have disabilities or people that fall under the umbrella of special education still are not fully included and don't have the same rights. So today we are going to guide you through kind of a true or false game, going to lighten the mood just a little bit,
yes,
to highlight some significant moments in the history of special education. We will read each statement, then we're going to take a pause for you to think of your response. Then we'll provide you with the correct answer. So we're going to get started with the first true or false question or statement. I don't know how they really be presenting these. Question just sounds like automatic, but it's not
right.
A question.
And that technically is not. That's true.
But it's going to be what I say it is. Okay, so the first one, true or false? There were different options for students with special needs. All right, listener, have you decided true or false? Okay, so this one's kind of weird, though, because it's kind of true, but not really. So education for students with special needs in the 70s look kind of all over the place. So there were some people who had like spina bifida or something, right? And they may have been able to be in a traditional school setting because maybe that school decided they wanted to experiment. They're like, hey, we'll have you here. So we'll have one person that has a handicap in the school. But then there were schools that had able-bodied and then disabled people all in the same place, but it was like people that are in special education programs were down in the basement, and they might come up and be included if there's like an assembly. And then something that's really, I really do not particularly like, especially in the 70s, people that were being put in institutions that were deemed acceptable because you were putting quote unquote mentally retarded people. And this was the language that was used. And right. I'm not using that language because I use it. I'm using that language because I'm trying to paint the picture of the history of special education.
Exactly.
So they put into these institutions, and one of the really infamous institutions was Willowbrook, that was actually open for quite some time and was supposed to be closed down in the 70s, but didn't actually close down until like 86. But there were really some like grotesque characteristics in Willowbrook.
Yeah. And you know, I was thinking about this though, because when I first had heard the word institutions, mm-hmm. I was like confused. I didn't know what exactly that meant.
Hmm.
And just to give y'all some context, it literally means like what it sounds like. It's a space where only the people that that they identified, and so whoever was running the school as mentally retarded, that's what they were labeled as back then, would send all of these students here into this space. But talking about the resources that they had there, or getting to like how it first started, first I think they admitted like 20 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, I think, or to give you context also, they only had a maximum occupancy of 4,000, mm-hmm. I wanna say.
Yeah, you know your facts.
And then, so over time though, they reached that 4,000 very quickly. So they got to 5,000, but backing up, they didn't have the resources to really provide for the 4,000 students and the types of resources that were not being put in. So for instance, you have 50 students to one adult. And these 50 students don't really have somebody who's trying to, there's not like teaching that's actually going on. They're just really trying to make sure that these kids are able to live.
Well, that's the other thing. They did have some teaching for kids that they deemed were able to sit down, but it would be like 2 hours a day.
Right.
For a super duper small percentage. I had learned that because that wasn't my original knowledge when I first heard about Willowbrook.
And so, and even with that, outside of the small percentage of kids, mm-hmm. that probably were able to do that, the other kids were literally just there to be there. They're like horrific images of kids literally lying on the bathroom floor, and not just one student that I would perceive as like a tantrum, but multiple students, like five, six, and one adult trying to respond to five or six students at a time.
It's interesting you keep using the word students, because I'm right, using the word people.
That is very true.
Because I think
too.
you're sending a wrong message by saying
yeah,
student.
That is very true.
Because they didn't treat them like students. Treated them like people.
They did not treat them like people.
Even like the fact that a child was just saying there was one attendant for like 50 people that were in the institution, because of the disparity in numbers, there wasn't enough people to actually work and support them.
Right.
And so we think about feeding time and how there are some people who just weren't able to feed themselves. And what ended up happening is that one attendant had to like balance out the feeding time. And so it happened that there were 3 minutes per child to get fed. And I'm just sitting here like, what if we were in a classroom with a neurotypical and able-bodied child, what would be done for us to give them 3 minutes to eat lunch?
That is, I can't even put that into words. Like, what?
No, it's crazy. It's insane. I also think that what people probably are assuming happens is there was a lot of physical abuse. There was a lot of sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And then when I was reading today, I was like, we're not even taking into consideration the early childhood misdiagnosis.
Right. Yeah.
So like, I don't know what the age limit or the age minimum was for submitting a child, but they could not have whatever you're saying they have, and now they're in this institution.
And the reason why it's important that we talk about that is because of socialization. And what that basically means is if you have someone who is being misdiagnosed and then they're put into this institution with individuals who have been diagnosed as having these disabilities, literally they are learning social behaviors of their peers at this time.
Yeah.
And so they start to internalize that, and that's what they believe is to be progressing like neurotypical or progressing traditionally neurotypically, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Whatever the case, you have kids who weren't from or did not have a diagnosis that did not need to be in there. And that's really like, it's unfortunate that the school did not, or the institution did not have the resources to make sure that those students were being transported or sent to another school or anything of that nature. So it's just so unfortunate that literally, as y'all heard, like over the maximum occupancy, over 5,000 students. And that's just like, I don't know if this was like on a yearly basis that 5,000 students were being brought to this Willowbrook institution. But we only know how much, how many students were really misdiagnosed and not really given the opportunity to live their best lives. Mm-hmm. True or false? Institutions were okay because they were places built specifically for people with disabilities. Therefore, they got the help they needed. I'll give you a little time. False.
Absolutely false. I mean, just based on the last true or false, we're thinking about thousands of people in the same space. And there's no place in the world where thousands of people are in the same space and they need the same things.
Right.
You just think about music festivals. I know it's a tangent, but, you know, it's a pandemic. I want to talk about music festivals. Thousands and thousands of people at Broccoli Fest that was supposed to happen, right? Everybody's not at the food trucks at the same time. No. Everybody's not at the stage at the same time because some people don't want to see Meg. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right.
And that would just be assuming everybody has the same needs. But
and that's not the case. And that's the reason. And I think that this is an important part, right? Like, I think that this is a good place to talk about the difference, or briefly talk about the difference between a 504 plan versus an IEP. And an IEP is for students who have a disability, and that impacts their ability to learn. While a 504 is for a student who has a disability that stops them from interacting with the environment in the way that an able-bodied person would. And so the difference, briefly, a student who has a 504 plan may have, let's say, epilepsy. So they may need to leave the class more often, or they may have had some type of situation that happened outside the school that's going to require some type of modifications to the assignments that they're doing. Whereas a student who has an intellectual disability that's impacting their ability to learn, they're probably going to still be in that same classroom, but, and mind you, there's a range of disabilities, and we'll get into that later. But the student will still is able to learn. However, they just need to have it in a different way. So maybe they are reading for 10 minutes at a time, as opposed to reading for that full hour, like the rest of the class normally would. Because maybe they need to listen to the content, listen to someone else read the book to them, as opposed to sitting there with the rest of the class, because they may not feel, it may not be the way that they learn, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we're trying to do a better job. That's what special education is about, is trying to authentically meet students where they are at. And so, like, that's what this true or false is really getting at, is trying to make sure that we are aware that the institutions that were previously built for people with disabilities,
they weren't really meeting the needs. You had people who were epileptic in the same space as people with cerebral palsy, which means you just have, in short, have very limited or various limitations in your muscle, with people who are deaf and people who are blind. Like, there's no, and then one attendee to 50 people. Like, there's just no way that all needs are being met.
Right.
All right, our next true or false. Ready? The civil rights movement for handicapped people took so long because disabled people were unable to protest. False. Yeah, that is absolutely false. So there's like a movie that I watched on Netflix, and we'll talk about it more in the call to action. It's called Crip Camp. I originally watched it because I thought it was about Crips.
I'm glad,
like, Crips and Bloods.
I'm being honest.
I'm not the only one. But it was about crippled people. And that's the word that they use for themselves. So one of the people that was in there is called her name was Judy Heumann. And she started the basically like a group of people called the Disabled in Action Foundation. And so they basically her and a man named Edward Roberts, who was also pretty prominent in sped civil rights, except for Judy was on East Coast in New York and Ed was on the West Coast in California at Berkeley, actually. They both kind of like partnered up to really push for the civil rights of people who are in special education. And so Judy was dope because she curated a 25-day sit-in. For that 504 plan, 504 section in legislation that basically stated that there needs to be accommodations for disabled people, and there also cannot, you can't discriminate, right? And so they had a sit-in, and they did a sit-in in the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. This is a building, y'all. Like, this is a whole building. And it was full with like dozens and dozens of people that had handicaps, right? And they, even though they had handicaps, they were like, no, I'm gonna sit in this building. So you got quadriplegics who are sleeping on floors without nurses that are there to like turn them over to avoid bed sores, but they're willing to do this. Like they're willing to like sit in protest.
And it's just amazing. So, oh goodness. Like, A, that spoke volumes to like what protesting is compared to like how we, I feel like as Black people, we protest now. And I think that, that's literally, it brings the value of protesting. So it just increases it. And I think that when I saw how Judy was going about this movement and seeing how she was speaking back way in the 70s, and even though that's not that
as a woman
ago,
too.
Right. And but just the way that she was effectively able to advocate for herself and like listening to it now and hearing her like perspective, you're like, damn, well like why did this not exist? And why was this seen as something that was so radical, like so crazy? Like these were human beings, people. Human beings, and this is what they had to do to even be accepted and be seen as being a human. Mm-hmm. That's just so wild to me.
It is crazy.
That is
crazy,
so wild.
But it's crazy, but it's like history repeats itself.
Literally.
And they're just very similar things.
It's always another, and because I'll be honest, I did not understand like ADA compliance and like all of that until I got to college.
Same.
And knowing why there has to be an elevator in a building, knowing why certain buildings on college campuses, you can't have courses in that building because of it being or it not being in ADA compliance and just different things like that. But getting back to how like motivational and how she led this movement, I think it's very important to A, call her out and say her name, but B, to speak more to the fact that there was not enough and there still isn't enough being discussed about the history of special education. And so like even talking about this in this episode, I love the fact that Lindsay and we really were talking about, before we get into special education, we have to talk about the history. Mm-hmm. And I think that even in my master's program, I was telling Lindsay this, is that we didn't really talk about the history of special education. So there's limited information. And so there's limited knowledge that's even available. Like you literally have to do a lot of digging to figure out how the movement was even created. Like you just think about these overarching laws and there's not enough that's said about how we got to where we are today outside of like the IDEA law and things of that nature.
And also circling back to, I just want to make sure we add this part because even with all the information that like I researched for this, there wasn't a lot of information on Black people or people of color in this movement. There were definitely like sprinkles, but one major piece is Brad Lomax. He's a major piece. He was a Black Panther actually, and he was handicapped. And because of his membership. Woo, that was hard. Because of membership as a Black Panther, but then because he was in the fight with people who were in the civil rights for disabled people, he was actually able to ensure that the Black Panther Party supplied a meal a day to the people that were in the sit-in, in the building. And then his brother also came. His brother was an able-bodied person, and they provided assistance to people. And there was a quote in Crip Gang, and one of the white women was like, "Well, why do you want
Crip Camp?
Crip Gang? Wow, Crip Camp. Please, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh, Lord Jesus. Rest in peace, Snip, though. But anyways, in Crip Camp, there was a white woman who was in the sit-in, and she, like, asked, like, wow, you guys are so kind. Like, why are you helping us? Because he's an able-bodied black man. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, Black Panther Party does really great things, but, like, how do we fit in there?
Right.
And she said that he said, you are trying to make the world a better place, and that's what we are about.
Hmm.
And I thought that was a really great piece to add on, because we don't really see black people in this handicap movement as if we don't have handicaps.
And nor do we see the, or I think that we can see it now, but just as far as like the radicalization of the Black Panther Party, we don't see all of the other elements of the Black Panther Party that are not discussed. And I think that this is one that speaks volumes to what their actual mission, their creed, their motto, their vision, what it all was about. It was about getting access and creating opportunity for everyone, creating equity. And that's what is so unfortunate. But let's get into this next true or false. So true or false, lots of people with disabilities went on to live fruitful lives. I'll give you a couple seconds.
I hope you guys know this one, but I'm not judging you, but I am.
The answer is true. So, I beat myself to the punch because I was talking about somewhat of the academic support and access center. Mm-hmm. And I think to that about like my experience at American University, of being a student where I had a lot of peers. My freshman year, I lived in this dorm called Roper Hall. And it was a hall that was, I forgot what they called it. It was some type, one of those communities where you just live with, it's a learning community, I think it was called. But essentially, you live with all different types of people that are not in the predominant dorm. But you have to like sign up for it, and it's people from all different types of walks of life. Like they intentionally put you all into a space so that you can have conversations with people who are not like you, in short.
Interesting.
And so like I learned a lot about myself, as well as like my roommate was transitioning, and she identified then as a man and she transitioned. And so we would have like some very interesting discussions and I would ask her how are you getting these resources? And she would tell me about the Academic Support and Access Center and like how she had to take different hormone pills and what she would do to leave class or to not have to take a test on a certain day because she had to do a certain procedure. And so those are the types of things that I feel like fall under. It's different, I know, because it's technically not a disability, but it still would fall under the Academic Support and Access Center. And I think that that's what the Academic Support and Access Center is about, is creating access for all different types of folks, as opposed to making people, trying to isolate people and make them feel less than. And so like I appreciated that my first year college living experience, because it helped to facilitate that like growth process and changed my like mindset of who people are and like trying to look deeper than what's on the outside and what if they may be in a wheelchair or if they may be blind and looking deeper than that and trying to have good discussions, because we're all human, we're all people, they have thoughts just like me. Some of the best experiences I've had in my life, just because I had someone who did not look like me, and they kind of challenged my whole spiel of being
that's a message.
18-year-old boy from black male from Rancho Cucamonga, California. You know,
that's a message. That's interesting, because I remember you telling me about that roommate, but I didn't know that you had this. I didn't know about the dorm situation.
The learning community. Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
And I forget what it's called. It probably wasn't even that. I probably didn't like call it the right thing, but goodness, it feels like it was so long ago as far as undergrad goes.
As far as undergrad, because I'm master now. It feels so long ago.
Master, okay.
For the second time, there are lots of other ways that people with disabilities are living fruitful lives. I would challenge you to go Google a reality TV show or a documentary. There's plenty on Netflix. I know that's what y'all watching right now during the pandemic.
Yes.
But go ahead and do that. And then lastly, our last true or false question. Yeah. True or false? Neurotypical and able-bodied people benefit from the implications of the civil rights movement for disabled people. That is absolutely true.
Yes.
And it's interesting because I don't even think we always think about how
not at all.
The movement for them has made things easier for us. But like, honestly, if you think about it, if you provide the resources, the tools, and the education to the most marginalized people, it's always going to help everybody else. So I would say one thing that like I like to think of that I thought about, I'm like, wow, that's not for us. That's right. for them. If you think about sidewalks and curbs and waiting at a crosswalk and how there's like a dip, you know, when you're at the crosswalk, you're dipping down. That wasn't for us.
Nope. Mm-mm.
That was for people with wheelchairs. Because there was a time, especially, I mean, I'm not going to say in the 70s, but before that too, but there's a time where like people with wheelchairs would have to like wheel in the street for blocks before they were able to find a spot where they could actually get on the sidewalk.
And that just blows my mind. And even thinking about, I didn't even look this up, but I probably should have put this on here, is like public transportation. Like,
yes.
That was something that Judy even talked about. She was like, we can't get on the subway because you have to take steps to get
You have to take steps to get to the subway.
So, like, how am I supposed to get to work? Am I supposed to wheelchair myself all the way to the office? Like, that's not...
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
And people, like... It's so interesting because, like, able-bodied people complain about, like, elevators not working. And it's like, I can't guarantee you that we would have the same amount of elevators and the same amount of buildings if we did not have the civil rights movement for disabled people.
Exactly.
And we might, but I think it might have came longer because... Those are the people that actually need them. Like, you legally have to have it.
That and that's what blows my mind is that I think that when people are protesting, when people are bringing up different topics and trying to figure out like why they are being seen as less than, I think that we need to do a better job of like listening to those folks because more often than not, they're saying this. They're trying to bring their issues to the forefront of the movement for a reason.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, it tends to benefit everyone in the long run. Yeah. Like, that's what blows my mind. Like, we all have benefited, like you said, from this movement.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even, like, just thinking about our cell phones, like all the accessibility features on your cell phone and text-to-speech. And there's just so many different ways that we truly don't appreciate. And I think that we need to do that.
And another disability that, well, you know, a disability that you can't see and that I don't know if people know or people comfortable talking about, but like men are more likely to be colorblind than women.
Oh, wow.
I've met several colorblind men in my lifetime. My principal is actually colorblind and he talks about how he's colorblind. I had a friend in high school who was colorblind and I'd be like, Aubrey, why you always wear the same stuff? But he can't see the colors. So he intentionally purchases, or I guess with assistance, things of colors that he can see.
Got it. Wow.
And so there's like accommodations that they have to make for themselves. But I just wanted to say that to just like raise the point that
Absolutely.
Like disabled doesn't necessarily mean something that you see. And it doesn't Exactly. necessarily have to mean a certain type of people.
Yes.
But like there are people that you work with or that you go to school with who are colorblind. And therefore, when we have those color coordinated PowerPoints or you're highlighting something in an email, they may not be able to see it, but they're making do with it.
Exactly.
So,
right.
I just want to throw that point out there. So those were our true or false. I hope that you guys got, I mean, you didn't get the whole full history of people with special needs. However, I hope that this was going to start growing a foundation for your understanding for the next episodes in our mini series.
So as you know, we're starting a mini series and it's all about special education. This week's call to action, we want you to really focus more on the resources that we're going to give you. And we mentioned them throughout the episode, but we want to dive a little deeper to tell you exactly where you need to go. Here are a couple places that you can start. The National Disability Rights Network is a great place to find more stories about Brad Lomax and disability rights in Black. They did a whole series highlighting disability rights in Black for Black History Month in February.
Also, search for videos of the Willowbrook Institution on YouTube. This is where children with disabilities were sent to receive an education. Yes, I have air quotes around education, because we mentioned in the episode that, you know, it wasn't really high quality education or education at all, because they were not treated equitably. They weren't given the same opportunities as their traditionally developing peers. So go ahead and check all those videos on YouTube. You can watch a 10-minute video. You can watch a full-length documentary at 57 minutes, but they're all on YouTube, and I suggest you go check out there.
Lastly, Netflix is another great resource to watch some films such as Crip Camp, which will give you more information on how the disability rights movement began.
And with that, don't forget to subscribe and stay in touch by following us on our Instagram pages at HottieHod or at Mama Lens. We love y'all.
Peace, love, and light.
Hootie hoo!